This is the day I've been looking forward to for the last 2.5 years. In 2010, we brought you the British Tech Network. It didn't just change podcasting, it changed all of our lives. Well, today, we're bringing you three revolutionary hosts of this class. The first, a northerner, a friend with touch controls. The second, a revolutionary sex symbol. And the third, a bloke from Norwich.
Uh-oh.
These are not three separate hosts. This is one amazing show. We call it the Big Mac Show. And here it is. Hello, lads. How are you doing? Chris Campion.
Evening.
I did it in one go. There you go.
You did it in roughly one go.
Apart from the boobs.
apart from Josh's boobs. Yeah, good evening.
How you doing, mate?
I'm good. Been a busy week at work. I'm glad it's Friday. I'm glad it's the Big Tech Show. Big Mac Show, should I say.
I only worked 2 days this week. I'm a happy boy.
Well, yeah, I got spoilt last week. I had an extra long weekend with it being the bank holiday. I had Thursday, Friday, the weekend, and obviously Monday off. So it's just been catching up on last week and the shorter week this week. You're cramming everything in. So but it's Friday. We can forget about the working week.
Good man. And a Batwench has just corrected me, actually. In 2010, it was Bagel Tech Network, not British Tech Network. So I've completely ruined that. But anyway.
No, that introduction was so epic. We will grant you poetic license.
Thank you very much. And talking about our revolutionary sex symbol, that's the voice of Jeffrey Gamet. How are you, mate?
Oh, I was guessing that I was the guy from Norwich.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
I've never been there, so I only have your word to go on.
It's my burden to bear. I wouldn't wish on anybody else. Not at all.
Yeah, but you have Avengers HQ.
Oh, yes, we do. We do, actually. It's quite nice. God knows why they chose all the places in the world, all the beautiful places they could choose. They went, do you know what? Norwich, that's a good idea.
Maybe they were thinking, people in Norwich, they're used to superheroes.
Oh, they've seen me a few times. Maybe that's what it is.
Exactly.
So we're here to cover the week in tech. But we thought we'd start because we've got just a little event coming around the corner. Probably the one that's going to shape the kind of tech going forward for generally every company as they try to copy exactly what they do. We've got WWDC. Now, talking to Camps today, he says he's been avoiding the rumours. Is that right, Camps?
Yeah, I like the magic of WWDC. I like the magic of the Apple event. So, yeah, I've seen a few headlines, but I've tried not to read too much into the rumour mills. I have done on quite a lot of probably about the last 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. I've read all the rumour sites. And it's spoiled it a little bit for me. So I thought this time I'm going to avoid them. I'll keep an eye out for the headlines. I'm going to avoid the main rumor mill. I'm going to enjoy the show, hopefully. I'm going to see what surprises come out, if there are any surprises. We'll see what Tim and crew unveil on Monday evening.
Exactly. So I thought what we'd do is, because I've been doing a bit of Apple bashing lately, so I'm getting a bit bored of things and all that sort of stuff. So I thought we'd just kind of just have a bit of a quick chat about what we would like to see. Now, Jeff probably knows what we're probably going to see because he's a clever man like that. But what sort of things would we like to see? So if we started with iOS, is it due a redesign yet?
It's okay. Every operating system is always due for a redesign, no matter how recently it was redesigned. Because if the companies that are making these operating systems aren't always thinking about what's coming and how to best address their users' needs and what new technologies are on the horizon, then they're failing. So yes, of course it's due for some sort of redesign, just like every year. Now, how much of a redesign we'll see, I don't know. I think Apple really likes how iOS looks right now.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I quite like how iOS looks right now. I like the usability. Everything's where it needs to be for me at the moment. I'm not saying for a second that there isn't opportunities in there to smarten things up. But I think it looks nice now. I think for me, I want to see a few new bits and bats added just to simplify some of the stuff and in the integration between watch and the apps a little bit more.
Well, my issue is this grid of apps. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of that. I think until something that replaces iOS comes along, we're not going to go anywhere away from that at all. But I kind of look at Android sometimes, and we've talked about this before. I've looked at Windows Phone and the customizability of those home screens is great. And I don't know if you're like me, I'm always changing the icons on my home screen, always. And I'm just thinking there's a better way to do this, because you've got the swipe in from the left, the most used apps and those sort of things. But then I've got, I've been using an iPhone for 10 years plus, well, no, 10 years. And I've got so many apps and I use quite a lot of them quite often. And it just seems very difficult to, I've got folders and all those sort of things. And it's just like getting to them is quite a palaver sometimes. And I'd like to see them do something like that. I don't know, an A to Z list or something, a bit more expandability on that left-hand menu of showing more than four apps that you use more often than others. I'm not sure what they can actually do in design terms. Like you say, the look of it's quite nice. It's iOS 7. It does, I was watching a couple of, what I watched the other day? Oh, the iPad keynote, the first iPad keynote. And you look at iOS 4, iOS 5 at the time that was up on the big screen and Steve Jobs presenting it. Jesus Christ, that looks so old now.
But at the time, it looked amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, thing is, when I got my first iPad, I thought this is just the best thing ever. And you think, and you think now, God, how did we? Because that's the old skeuomorphic design, wasn't it? It was all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Paul. It's interesting you say you swap the icons around on your home screen an awful lot. I don't. I've normally got one or two spare places left on my home screen, and if there's an app that I use a hell of a lot, I drop it on there. Otherwise, I'm a bit of an organization buff and have multiple. I have folders. So just looking through there now. I have a folder for some of the astronomy apps. A folder for books, a folder for car stuff, for education, film and TV, etc. And I know where all my apps are, and some of the ones that aren't on the home screen, I can go to them without even looking at the screen. I know exactly where they are. It's just all muscle memory stuff. So for that reason, I don't tend to move things around. I do the swipe right, the Siri app suggestions, and obviously if you hit the show more, you can see AI icons on there. And I have Launcher in there as well, and some of the regularly used apps I drop into the launcher, and that works for me. But I do see, and it's interesting because you've mentioned it, and I see plenty of other people who change their home screen rounds a lot, and I've just never got on that bus.
My home screen's pretty static. It's designed, or no, it's the way I have it set up. It's a group of apps that I use all the time, and they're actually organized based on how I hold my phone. Mm-hmm. So the apps that I use the most are in the bottom left-hand corner, because I tend to hold my phone in my left hand, so I can tap those with my thumb easily. And then you kind of radiate up and out from there for the apps that I use regularly, but less often than that primary group. And it's like if someone looked at my home screen, it looks like a random collection of apps until you understand how they're actually grouped. So my home screen doesn't change unless there's a specific app that I realize I'm really not using anymore. And then it leaves the home screen and something else takes its place. Mm-hmm. And the whole top row of icons, I put in blank spacers so that there's actually nothing up there because I can't reach that high with my thumb.
Oh, you got a plus, have you?
No.
No.
I have the standard.
Okay.
Just an iPhone 7. So, with a case on it, I just can't get to that top row with one hand.
So interesting enough, obviously the most important real estate of the iPhone is that bottom row of four. If you don't mind me asking, what do you have in that bottom row of four?
Mine's pretty boring. Phone, mail, Safari, music.
Phone, mail, Safari, Fantastical.
See, I move phone out of the bottom because I just don't phone people and I don't want people to phone me. So I've got email, Chrome, podcasts, and messages.
That totally makes sense.
Because when I did the last reset, I just thought I use messages more than I do the phone. I don't generally call anyone, and obviously Chrome is obviously just because I check the odd thing. I've got a new email app, which is my cool thing, which I'll talk to you later. And then the other thing that I'd love one more space down there because I've got Spotify, and I'd love that down there as well as the podcast app, but.
I use podcasts a lot, but the reason I don't have it on my front screen is because and I'm trying to think what the functionality is called, and it's just escaping me at the minute. As soon as I get into my car, my phone connects via Bluetooth, and on the bottom left hand side, it knows straight away that podcasts is the app that I listen to. It's there. I flick that up, podcasts come on. Once I connect my Bluetooth headphones, it pops up podcasts, because more often than not, that's what it is. That's why I keep music on my bottom row, because if I want to access music rather than podcasts, it's accessible for me.
You see, now I keep podcasts in my bottom row, easily accessible, because that's you two guys in my pocket. I can access you both anytime I like.
That's a beautiful thing. Did it just get hot in here?
It did, yes. Oh, my word. So I think you're right. In terms of design, I don't think we're going to see much, are we? Functionality wise though, what more can they bring? Because, you know,
they can improve economy of motion, which, okay. And what I mean by that, I kind of think I may have coined the term, but I'm not sure. Meaning, how many taps or swipes does it take to accomplish a goal or a task? The fewer that you need, the better your design is. So Apple can address things like that. So like if you want to see what Wi-Fi network you are on an iOS device, right now you have to tap settings.
Yeah.
And then if you want to change that Wi-Fi network, now you have to tap Wi-Fi and then scroll through and find the network and select that. What they could do is put a... like a force touch on the Wi-Fi icon in the control center. So you swipe up and then tap and hold on the Wi-Fi icon, and you get a menu that pops up and it shows you what network you're on and what other networks are available. They need to do things like that. Now, it's not just the Wi-Fi, but all those little features they have where you have like one swipe access for everything that they control, you need to have one tap access from there.
Oh, because I don't have 3D touch, I've still got a six. So
yeah, but you could do a tap and hold.
Yep.
And that would accomplish the same thing.
True. Yeah, so you'd want to see it, wouldn't you? Yeah. Because the control center, I remember when iOS 7 was announced at WWDC. Back when it was announced, that I think Control Center got the kind of biggest applause, because that was something that Android had for a long time. That
we were all excited, and then we started using it. And we're like, what was Apple thinking? They completely left out the functionality that we really need.
I think with Control Center, there's other things that they can add in there. And when you swipe up and bring Control Center up, it only covers half your screen. There's half a screen worth of wasted real estate there. Let it fill pretty much the screen. So 98% of the screen, CC, the very thin borderline at the top, and put some extra bits in there, some extra bits that are easy to use. Same on the when you swipe left and you have the music control. There's an awful lot of wasted real estate in that half screen that could be used for other things. You could put in there a quick shift icon into podcasts, for instance, as well as music.
I think what they need to do, I think you're totally on the right path, but instead of making that control center take up more of the screen, keep it about the same size, but use it more efficiently. Because if it takes up more of the screen, you're less likely to be able to use those controls one-handed. So do things like get rid of the giant night shift button. Why in the world is there a button that takes up a quarter of that space?
Yep.
Just for night shift.
Because that's a setting that you set and then never think about it again, isn't it?
Exactly.
Right. And why can't I change what controls I have on this slide up pane? Mm-hmm. Because I will never start a timer from here. And I will never open the calculator from here. Let me put other controls in there.
I don't start a timer, but I use, that's how I set my alarm every night when I go to bed. So I put the phone on the nightstand, swipe up, hit the button. And again, this goes back to the whole UI point that you started this part with, Jeff, in that to set an alarm, I have to swipe up for notifications, I have to hit the timer button, then I have to hit the alarm button, then I have to set my alarm. You know, that's 3-4 movements just to set an alarm. Mm-hmm. Saying that, I could just ask Siri to do it, but if my wife's asleep next to me, I'm not going to start talking. Because that will get me shot.
Yeah, do not touch another woman in bed. No, that's the killer, isn't it? But then I
just self.
Yeah, exactly. But then obviously I do a lot of stuff through my watch, you know. So it makes a lot of that stuff redundant. So timers, yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to ask my watch to set an alarm before I go to bed and those sort of things, but. Yeah, looking here, you've got airplane mirroring is a huge button, airdrop is a huge button, and night shift is a huge button, and that takes up probably...
That's half your space right there.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't need to be. I think you're right. If that was a customizable menu, that'd be so much more easy.
And my guess is that the first data point Apple would get is that everyone takes the night shift button out completely.
Because it's a handy feature to have, but it comes on at 10 o'clock for me every night anyway. I don't on a Thursday. I don't go, oh, do you know what? I'm going to set it for an hour earlier. I need quick access to that. I don't need it.
But that's the design point, isn't it? Something like that is not something that you change regular. That button could easily be swapped out, to Jeff's point, for the Wi-Fi select button that takes you straight into settings. It's a quick key straight into settings to be able to choose or a force touch to be able to select a different Wi-Fi hotspot. And and it's all around usability, you know, which buttons are getting used. And Apple surely will have all the data on this. Which buttons on there are used, which aren't, swap them over.
Yeah. Well, surely access to the battery options would be better in there. I know there is, because I've set batteries as a widget, but for the life of me, I just don't see it. Oh no, I see the status of my battery, so I know my watch has got 27%, my phone has got 100%, but I can't go into low power mode or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, I don't need a widget to tell me the battery life, because I have an icon in the top right hand corner that tells me the battery life. But if I could just quickly switch to low power mode, that they're the sort of things that you really need.
Yep.
So whether it's something that they, you know, they know they're going to do this all the time, they hold these things back because, you know, it's a new feature for the new OS. But these are just really simple things. I think these left swipe down swipes, up, you know, up swipes and all that sort of thing. You should be able to customize all of this stuff.
Absolutely.
I think on Android you can, can't you?
You have a lot more control over what you customize on Android.
So where do we think they're going to go hardware wise? Obviously, we exchanged a couple of messages earlier, didn't we, Jeff? In terms of what we think WWDC may show us.
So up until a couple weeks ago, I was very skeptical about the Siri speaker. But I'm at the point now where I think the likelihood Apple is going to announce the Siri speaker at WWDC is very high. And the reason I think they're going to do it is because, first, they're ready. But second, because I think they're going to do like they did with the Apple TV. Remember how they announced it and gave developers early access so they could start writing apps? I think they're going to do the same thing for the Siri speaker.
I think you're right. I think the speaker needs apps to be successful. If it hasn't got apps, it's dead in the water for some considerable time.
Yep, and that's exactly the logic behind giving developers early access to the Apple TV.
So do you think it will show as a speaker? I would prefer.
Yes.
What I would prefer is Apple TV with a Siri speaker add-on for the living room, for instance, and then an Echo Dot-like accompanying device for around the house.
I think you're generally on the right path, but it's not going to be exactly like that. I don't think. I think what Apple is doing, and this is an idea Dave Hamilton came up with, and when he presented it to me, I was like, "Holy crap! I bet you nailed it." This is something that is more of a competitor to Sonos than to Amazon. So this is going to be designed to be a high-end speaker, so a high-end audio system, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it has all of these other integration features in it. So you'll get one for the living room, and you might get another for the bedroom, and then you have your linked streamable high quality audio wherever you go in your house, just like you can do
with Apple Music.
So you can stream your iTunes library, you can stream Apple Music, and I could see Apple going back and forth on whether or not they're going to allow other services on there. I think it would be smart, just like on Apple TV, if you want people to use this as their only device, you need to give them access to a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thing is, the one thing we know is they've got to release one now because all of their competitors have one now. So it's...
Well, they don't have to release it because all their competitors have one. They have to release it because they think they can do it better.
Yeah. And just to sort of pick up so many other conversations on the Mac show, do you think that they can do this with Siri? Is Siri in the right place to do this product justice?
Maybe. It depends on what they're going to let the device do. If it's supposed to be like having the computer from the Starship Enterprise in your house, no. It's not going to work. But if they're going to more tightly control the sorts of things that you do when you're interacting with it, yeah, it's possible. I think that it's more likely to work reliably here than where you guys are. And I think that's because Apple, like so many companies, has this problem where they focus primarily on making sure something works in the market where they're focused or where their headquarters are.
Yeah.
So in that case, that means American accents. And I know from talking with people for a long time, if you had an Irish accent or Scottish accent, good luck getting Siri to understand a thing you say.
Yeah, I'd be interested in this. We talked on, I think it was on one of the big shows a while ago. I'm quite interested in the Apple speaker from the point of view of the quality angle, but absolutely Siri needs to work for me to be interested in it. I've got a Dot in the living room, which I like for limited use. It doesn't do as much as I would like it to, and I think that's mainly because I want it to do more HomeKit stuff. And obviously that's not where it needs to be yet. But then again, neither are a lot of the other HomeKit devices, or certainly not the ones that I've got. But I've noticed some random stuff going on with my Dot at the moment, and I'm getting a bit fed up of it. It's acting so random. It goes off. It goes off in the middle of the night when there's nobody in the living room. There is no noise down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can be laid in bed upstairs, and all of a sudden I'll hear just Jeff downstairs say things like, "I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said there," or something like that. There is nobody downstairs. The living room's empty. The TV's not.
Your house is haunted.
Mm. Exactly.
And it probably does it 2-3 times a week. And it does it when you're watching TV, and definitely. And we've even rewound the TV to think, did it say anything like the trigger word? Nothing. Yes, it's going to be random, so maybe I need to reset that and give it another go. But I'm certainly interested in what the Apple speaker or whatever that might look like if it's announced. I'm interested to see what that might do.
Yeah, I've been having weird problems with my Echo Dots as well. I have two, one in the living room, one in the bedroom, and they act like they've become disinterested in me. For that's the best way I can describe it, where I will give them the trigger word so that they listen, and then I'll ask them to do something, and it's almost like they're doing this passive aggressive thing where they don't listen. And then after I try a couple times, they'll listen. And when I tell them to do something, you know, like turn on a specific light, they'll say, "Okay." And then nothing happens.
I've had that.
I tell them again, and they're like, "Okay." Or they tell me the device isn't there or doesn't exist.
Right.
And then I try it again, and the Echo Dot says, "Okay." And the light comes on.
Yeah. I've had that exact scenario this week, and I was blaming the Wemos. So I reset the Wemo switch, disconnected it from You Know Me, set it all back up, and it worked. Maybe I was blaming the wrong device.
Maybe I just need to power cycle my Dots. Because as far as I know, neither one of them has been powered off for months.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I might have been powered off for a long time. It was a really fun thing when I first got it, and then I'm not so much into home automation as you guys are, so I haven't got that kind of need for it. But the speaker thing has kind of passed me by. It seemed like a really good idea to start with, and to be able to ask it things here and there. And I first got it, with the Google Home adverts, it's like you can ask it a question for homework and all those sort of things. And it's okay for a while. How many times a day do you talk to yours?
I talk to mine throughout the day.
Really?
Every day. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm out of the house for the majority of the day. For me, it's on a morning, come downstairs, kettle on, normally say what are the news headlines. And
I'll do that.
I get a Sky News readout. And then what's the weather we're going to be like tomorrow? That's generally the stuff I ask it. Switch lights on, switch lights off, and things like that. My daughter asks for various music. It's normally kids bop and other such trash. She'll play things like Animal Game, the guessing games where you have to do as the animal got fur, four legs, blah, blah, blah. And she'll sit and talk to just Jeff all day if she got the chance, just playing games like that and Secret Door and things. She loves that. But yeah, it gets a bit of use. She doesn't sit lonely in the corner.
So the thing that Apple needs to do is if they Tim comes from the stage or whoever presents it and they just go, okay, it's a speaker and you can ask it to play a game or ask the weather or get your news. Everyone's going to go, well, you failed because everyone else does that.
Yeah, I can't imagine Apple doing that. If they can't bring something unique to this space, then there's no point in getting into the space.
And this is where, for me, things like an integration with Apple TV, I would see as a benefit, because I prefer to be able to sit on the sofa and say, right, I don't want to pick my Apple TV remote up and trigger Siri that way. I want to be able to say, play Netflix, play so-and-so movie that's in my movies library, and it just come on. It just come on the TV. That's what I want to be able to do. And if there is a device, whether it be linked to Apple TV physically or a separate device, so therefore you have your high-end speaker in the corner, but it can interact with Apple TV, and I can ask it to play something and it just do it, that interests me.
But that's what the Google Home with a cast-enabled TV and those sort of things do already, don't they? So that was the thing that really interested me about the Google Home, is that you can say, we'll play this, and if you've got like a Chromecast plugged in your TV, then it comes on. But obviously we're invested in the Apple ecosystem, we've got Apple TV, so to add that to our arsenal, because yeah, I hate talking to that remote. And then the text input is just like, I don't even care anymore.
I do that. I do text input from my phone.
Yeah. So to be able to speak it without having to interact with a remote control, that appeals.
Yeah. If I have to pick up that remote one more time at the wrong bloody end, it's just so annoying.
In terms of other hardware, iPad Mini's going. That's pretty much a done deal.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, me too. I've got an iPad Mini 3, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the side of my bed. I read on that. You know, I've got my 9.7 Pro. That's in my work bag, and it's here at the side of me now. I've got the Mini at the side of the bed, I love that device. It's a perfect size device for a bit of internet consumption for me.
Yeah. Now my daughter's got the Mini. She absolutely adores that thing. Yeah. And I think that form factor is lovely. I think it's the perfect iPad. So if it went away, I know they're saying that, you know, the bigger phones would have been the reason it got killed off, but it's a lovely little, like, you know, one-handed iPad. It's absolutely lovely because it does everything. You know, I'd love to see an iPad Mini Pro if there was one. You know, we were in the Apple store yesterday, me and my daughter, and we were playing with the 13-inch one, and she just absolutely loved it. But she does so much kind of and I don't know how she does it. She does so much Photoshop, you know, photo editing and all that on an iPad Mini. Absolutely blows me away. And I think she'd love to keep that form factor over something bigger.
See, I don't see a need for a Mini Pro, anything smaller than the 9.7. I think the next iteration of iPhone will probably have Apple Pencil support, and will carry the price tag for things like that. I think the Mini needs to be the cheaper end device. But clearly Apple feel otherwise. If this one's going in that once was a product is no more bin.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
So do you think it's going to be the 9.7 iPad, the recently released one? Do you think there'll be any spec bumps to that in the
no?
That'll stay as it is. The 10.5 Pro in the middle and the 12.9 Pro possibly with the spec bump at the top end.
Yeah, if they introduce the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, I feel like they also really need to spec bump the 12.9-inch model, because the 12.9-inch model has never been updated.
No, so exactly.
So that one came out in 2015, and it still surprises me when I think it came out in 2015, because it feels like a device that's brand new today still. Mm-hmm. But when you look at what they've done with the 9.7-inch version, they need to update the 12.9-inch now. So it's time for that, so that they could introduce the 10.5-inch model, spec bump the 12.9-inch model, and leave the 9.7 where it is.
Yeah, I agree totally.
So are we, because we're talking about hardware, WWDC, I know it's been a place to release hardware in the past. But it hasn't been a recent thing. So do you think, because there's talk about, you know, I heard it, I don't understand why, the new updates to the MacBooks, the MacBook Air and all those sort of things.
I think Apple took an awful lot of criticism last year in terms of neglecting the pro market. My personal feeling is that the Pro that they put out, the MacBook Pro that they put out last year, was we need to put something out there, and this is what we've got ready. This is what we're going to do. I think they were possibly in the process of redeveloping their Pro line, and I think this is where they're going to show this.
Could be. Now, okay. It's totally possible that we will get an updated Touch Bar MacBook Pro, because the Kaby Lake processors are available in quantity now, and that would allow Apple to make a 32-gigabyte MacBook Pro. That's a limitation of the Skylake processors. Yep. So that's why my computer has only 16 gigs of RAM. But keep in mind, every year leading up to Macworld Expo for the past several years, The rumors can be encapsulated essentially as Apple's going to update every single product that they've ever made, are currently making, or will make at some point in the future, and they're going to do it all during this 90-minute presentation. So we have that same setup every year, and every year Apple doesn't do that, because that's not the purpose of WWDC. Mm. So what they're going to show us will be things that are important for developers, with a splash of why it's important to the average consumer as well. And so, of course, we get all the software or operating system refresh teasers. And then if there's hardware that relates to developers in some way, then we get that. And then if there's other hardware that needs to be introduced, there's either a separate event or they just do it with a press release. And we got, I guess it was just yesterday, Swift Playgrounds.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
And we got the announcement about how much money has been paid to developers since the App Store first launched. Those are both things that I would expect to be in the keynote. Since they were dumped on us yesterday, that tells me that Apple has been going through everything that they're showing at the keynote. Yeah. And they're like, that's got to go, that's got to go. So they just did press releases and got that stuff out of the way now.
I was about to say exactly the same thing, Jeff. They've got a running order. They've got a list of stuff that they want to cover in their presentation. They've looked at their running order. They've realized they can't fit it in. They've taken some things out of it and released it by press release. And I think 70 billion paid to developers is a huge number. That's when you've got a room full of developers, you want to tell them how much money you've paid those guys. So for them to take things like that out, and take things like the update to Playgrounds, you know, which is the tool for the future developers.
And do you know how cool that demo would have been?
Exactly.
You have Lego come on stage with Apple, and they use an iPad, and they control Mindstorm's robots with mm-hmm. Swift right there on stage. Man, the developers would have to go change their pants afterwards.
Yes. So for them to take two massive stories like that out of their showpiece keynote for developers, for me, that says we've got some other special stuff to show you this year.
Exactly. I'm totally with you. Yep.
But, But that's the intrigues me though, because obviously Apple is a consumer, well, an enterprise, but a consumer electronics company. This is a developers conference. Do you think that they are so big now that it's as big as a keynote for hardware, even though you are selling to developers who are going to develop the next apps, the next software, all those sort of things now?
Well, there's certain hardware things that would be appropriate to show off at an event like this. So let's say Apple refreshes the MacBook Pro, even though they did this just 9 months ago. That is plausible because the MacBook Pro is the computer that developers use more than any other to make their Mac and iOS apps. So they have developers in mind when they're working on this machine. Then something like the Siri speaker, if they want developers creating apps for it, then it's appropriate to show this at the event as well.
Yeah.
But if they're just like rolling out all these new products because they have a platform where they have everyone's eyes, that doesn't make sense because Apple can schedule a media event anytime they want. And as long as they do it with 3 days notice, which is crazy tight, they will get people from everywhere flying in and they will fill up any auditorium they want. So they have a command audience anytime they want it. They don't need to rely on WWDC for that.
Very true. So obviously the only other big things we've got, obviously we're going to see a new watchOS, aren't we? But I think it's got to be gearing up for a new Apple Watch in September.
Yeah, that seems plausible. And I think that Apple is going to be doing more with health and fitness with the Apple Watch moving forward. So I expect we'll see new features related to that.
Yeah, there's two things, only two things that I want from watchOS. One is I want to be able to initiate, because I have my Bluetooth earphones. I've not got AirPods yet. I've got Bluetooth earphones connected to my phone, not to my watch. I want to be able to initiate a phone call from my watch that comes into my ears via the phone.
Good point.
Yeah, because you can, if I've got my Bluetooth connected to my watch, I can initiate a phone call. But my headphones are connected to the phone, not to the watch. Mm. So that's one thing I'd love to be able to do. Even if that means, you know, dial somebody and I get an option button, you know, do I want it to start talking on my phone or watch, just a button, tap that button, then it works. And the other thing I want is from an activity point of view, I like the Apple Activity app. I also use MapMyRun, but if I like the Apple Activity app, but I want voice cues. So when you're running, on your watch, it tells you your distance, it tells you your average pace. It doesn't give you voice cues, which is the third party apps.
Yeah, it just taps your wrist every now and then.
Exactly.
Yeah, or just speaks in your ear. It just says in your ear, you know, current pace, whatever that might be. For me, I'm happy with watchOS. They're the two things that I want to see.
I hadn't thought about that, but I would love that. I mean, like if I'm out hiking, and a lot of times I'm hiking in cold weather. So I've started tracking what I'm doing on my Apple Watch, but now it's buried under layers of coats and gloves. So I hit a mile marker point or, you know, I've hit a milestone mark of some point in the hike and I get a tap on my wrist.
Yeah.
Well, that tap could be I just walked miles. It could be I have a text message that's come in. It could be a weather alert. So it would be nice if I could have, you know, even just like one Bluetooth earphone in.
Yeah.
And get some sort of audio feedback from my watch. So I was fine with the watch though it was up until now. You've totally ruined it for me.
So the Nike Run app, which obviously the partnership there with Apple, if I went out for a run on the Nike Run app, I can say, right, start my run, and I can set my voice cues, and I can set that at 1 kilometer, 1 mile, 1 mile, and so on, or every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes, and it will speak in your ear current distance, current total time, average pace, split time, and it reads all those things out to you. And if you're a serious runner who's tracking your pace, maybe you're training for a run, something like that, that's pretty important news. You know, it's what you want to hear, so you know how you're performing in terms of your run. Things like MapMyRun and the Nike app, they do that. Strava does it in-app, but doesn't do it via the watch. Apple's got all the mechanism in terms of their activity tracking there on the watch, but they need voice cues.
Yeah. I want something really simple, and I put this in the Slack room a couple of weeks ago. All I want on my watch face is the connectivity of my phone on my watch. So I wonder how many bars I've got of like 4G. Because there's nothing more frustrating than losing connectivity or being in a low connectivity area and your watch goes, well, I can't do that right now. And obviously on my phone, I can see I've got 4 bars now or 4 dots now. Surely just to put that on the screen is not a...
That would make a perfect complication for the, you know, that bottom strip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But because you're always kind of like, you know... You do something on your phone and then it goes, oh, I can't do that now. And then you go back to your home screen and you then see that you've got no service or it's very low. But when you're doing it, the point of the watch is that you don't want to take your phone out of your pocket. And then you do something on your watch, which generally on your watch takes longer to do than it does on the phone, like send a message or whatever, just to go, well, I'm not going to bother right now because I can see I've got 1 bar or no service. I think it's weird that we don't have that right now. So a little, yeah, more complication would be a really, really nice feature.
Yeah, I'd like developers to be able to do more with complications. And I don't need anything like really crazy exotic from them, but stuff like with Fantastical. What I would love is to have a complication where I can see the day and the date, which I can do right now, but then just have a little colored dot right beside it showing me what category my next appointment is. Yeah. And if there's no dot, there's no next appointment on my schedule. And that would be great because I don't need to see the whole appointment listed on the bottom of my screen. I just need to know, yep, there's something else coming up.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can't do that right now. But it's something that sounds really simple.
It does. And is it just me? And I asked my wife this. Has anyone else lost Minnie Mouse?
No. She's still there.
Oh. I've
lost Minnie Mouse. I've got Mickey. I've got no Minnie. Maybe I'll just mess it up because my wife's
still there. She is?
No. No, I've got Mickey, no Minnie. Maybe I just swiped her away or something. Maybe I just
you must have done.
Yeah, probably. So the only other thing we've got left in terms of is macOS. Now I'm quite happy with macOS as it is. Obviously, have the Sierra on all of my devices right now and. It seems to work really well. I don't know what else they could possibly do to improve it right now.
I will give you one thing.
Go on.
It's one thing that I have wanted for fracking years. Stop letting apps take the focus from what I'm currently doing.
Go on.
So you know how, like, you're working in one app, yeah. And so... All right, so here's a real world example. I'm writing an article. I know that I'm going to need to make a graphic for that article. So I launch Photoshop real quick and then jump back to BB Edit. And so Photoshop's loading while I'm working in BB Edit, and all of a sudden Photoshop's in the front.
Ah, yes, good point.
That should never ever happen. Or yeah. I'm working in one app and another app has some sort of alert it wants to give me, and that app is now the foremost app.
Yes. Yeah. You're absolutely
right. That should never, ever happen.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Because obviously, in my job on my 5K iMac, I have many, many, many apps running all at once. And there, one will then decide it's going to, or a video is finished rendering. It's going, I just finished rendering this video. No matter what you're doing, I'm going to tell you this. Do you want to see it? Do you want to reveal it and find it? No, I don't care. I know I'm rendering it. I'll look at it when I'm ready. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and something like that, even if you're going to get notification, that could be a little thing that just pops up in the corner of the screen. You know, like when you get the notification that says, hey, you've got an email. It could be the same sort of thing. It pops up and then just disappears. And it never interferes with what you're actually doing.
That's all you need. Because the only app that I think that I have that does that properly is Handbrake. When I'm re-encoding a video in Handbrake will kind of slide in for the right and go, put that cocktail down. Put the cocktail down. Your encode is done. But yeah, things like, yeah, certainly Adobe stuff. It's always bugging.
Oh, yeah.
Always. Or Adobe does that thing where you export a file, it'll then open a Finder window and show you where you've saved the file. It's like, I know where I saved it. I don't need you to show me. So yeah, that's quite a good, yeah, that would be a nice little thing. But I think it's going to be a very small update this time around, I think.
I think that it will appear to be a small update, but I have a feeling that this will be one of the years where we get a lot of under the hood stuff again. Because we're kind of seeing this pattern where we get a year where we get all of this stuff under the hood that sets up the operating system for something bigger. And then the next year we get the bigger thing. And I think Sierra was the bigger front end stuff year. And this time it'll be more of the underpinning stuff again.
Will it be the APFS this time?
No, I don't think so. I think what they'll end up doing is making APFS more accessible this time, but I don't think we're going to be making the full transition over to APFS. It could happen, but I think the reason Apple did it on iOS first is because it is a completely contained and controlled environment, and macOS is not.
Exactly, yeah.
So I think we'll have this year of more APFS research on iOS, and it will become more accessible in macOS. And then maybe next year, that's when Apple will do the switchover. But I know they want to do it, and it totally makes sense to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's about time, because where we are now is so old now, isn't it?
Do you have any predictions on what they're going to call? Good point from Bart Wench. You know, I wonder what stupid name it'll be called. Do you have any predictions?
I'm rooting for macOS West Hollywood. And and if you've ever been to West Hollywood, you'd either be like, you can't, no, or you'd be like, fabulous. it's one or the other.
I want to see macOS Big Sur.
Big Sur.
I bet that's on the list. I don't know if it's this year, but I bet Big Sur is on the list.
I agree.
Cool. Well, that was. I'll tell you what. I didn't think we'd cover that much ground in that first time, actually.
Well, you almost never let me talk about Apple stuff.
Oh, no, so, yeah. No. So when you got my message early today, you were quite pleased.
I was like, oh wow, I get to kind of cut loose today.
There we go. We've let you off the leash, Jeff. We've let you off the leash. Well, what we'll do, what we need to have for the keynote on Monday is some bingo cards. What I'll do is I'll look back on what we've predicted. I'll produce some bingo cards, and we can cross off on Monday what we've talked about today. And there'll be a drink in for the person who gets house first.
Awesome.
That's what I like. Well, just for the other people who didn't tune in for Apple, you guys have brought a story, I hope.
Oh, yeah, you want stories.
Chris has already told me, so go for it, Chris.
Yeah, I need to find it.
And that's okay. I need to find mine real quick, too.
Okay.
I have a story, too.
Right, I can put mine in the chat room now. So this story, I was talking to Paul earlier. There we go. This story, I kind of glanced at it through the week. And thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll have another look at that a bit later on in the week.
Oh, this
and
is.
Then
a
I had
good
a look
story.
Today, and I didn't realize just how big this story was.
it kind of popped up everywhere, didn't it?
Yeah. So right, I'll start this off, but let's all sort of jump in. So Andy Rubin, and for anybody listening or watching live who doesn't know who Andy Rubin is, he's a developer. That's his background. He started off in robotics. He's worked for Apple in manufacturing engineering. He's worked all over the shop. He is a co-founder of Android's, probably where he really, really made his name. Mm-hmm. He's worked at Google, and now he is founder of Playground Global, which is a venture capitalist group who are really looking and investing in the next big thing. Now, Andy Rubin and partners have born a new company called Essential. And Essential are entering the market to do a few interesting things. So this week, they've announced a new operating system, which is going to be fairly ubiquitous. It's going to link into multiple different platforms. They've announced a phone, an Android-based phone. And they have announced a home device, a hub type device, which again will link into various platforms and be your Internet of Things type hub in the home. Would you guys say I've kind of covered that properly?
Yeah. It's like an Internet of Things in your home management system rolled in with a voice assistant appliance.
Yes, good point. So interesting thing, new to market, he's got a lot, as a venture capitalist, he's got a lot of funding behind him. And it's going to be really interesting to see where this one goes in terms of, I absolutely see that the players, I think it actually says this in the article that I posted. I just grabbed an article, like Paul says, it is posted all over the shop. You can absolutely see people like Amazon and Alexa jumping on the back of this, because Alexa's been rolled out everywhere. Same with Google Assistant. Whether Apple will ever truly link in with stuff like this, I have no idea.
Well, they're saying that it's going to be HomeKit compatible.
So oh, really?
Crossed. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
And that's something that I find very intriguing. Yeah, their phone that they announced, my initial reaction was, okay, whatever, another Android phone. Mm-hmm. And I still look at their phone, even though it's got all these interesting features, it's another Android phone. But the Essential Home, now that's really interesting. And this is something that when it comes out, if it does the things that they are promising right now, I want to get my hands on one. And I want to push it to its limits to see what I can make this thing do, because it sounds like a really interesting device.
So what sets it apart from, you know, the ambient kind of OSs that we've already seen?
This is like the Rosetta Stone of smart home and voice assistant interfaces, because it works with all of them. So.
Right.
So you can have this one device that handles whatever you're doing through Alexa. You can control HomeKit through it as well. And it's going to have Google support. And because of the way it's written, that they're calling Ambient OS an operating system that's also the API. And so that's like marketing speak for... It's going to be very accessible to developers, and it's going to be very easy to hook other things into this. So this has the potential to grow into something that's much more than what they showed off this week.
Right. So more of a universal kind of, yeah, because yeah. That's the problem is with all the kind of assistance and things in the home right now. Obviously, you're one ecosystem or the other, aren't you?
Right. Yeah. And for me right now, I am a hybrid ecosystem for smart home because I'm using Alexa and Siri both, depending on what the task is that I need to do.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy when you think about it. And I wouldn't ask anyone else to do this, but you know, if I'm going to bash my head against the wall and test out every smart home thing I can, well, that's what I have to do. But having one device that truly communicates to all these things, that's really compelling.
Right. So obviously this is a move from obviously Andy Rubin's new company. The phone itself, like you said, it's kind of like, yeah, another Android phone. And I think that the only thing that really kind of sets it apart, and maybe it sets it apart or not, is this modular kind of snap-on stuff, isn't it? 360 cameras and all those sort of things. But we've had that on the iPhone and all that sort of thing for ages, haven't we?
This is something that we've been able to do with iPhones, Android phones from several manufacturers, Windows phones, you know, attach accessories to make the phone do other things. What's different about this one is that it's magnetic attachments. So supposedly it's
MagSafe.
More convenient. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just can't get excited about the phone.
Andy Rubin kind of said, I think in the interview, Walt Mossberg, where they said, you know, is there going to be some exciting OS with the phone? And Andy Rubin sort of said, I designed Android. Android is the platform. It's Andy Rubin's platform, and therefore, why would he go for another platform straight out of the box at this stage when Android's just so huge and it's got such a huge developer basis that sits with it? I think to try and take on that with a new mobile OS at this stage would be a bit nuts. You know, there is no ubiquitous home hub OS, so it makes absolute sense to chase that one. I don't see the point in a new mobile OS.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah, exactly. But he is, but you know, in terms of the phone, I think the phone is just a byproduct of, like you say, the home hub kind of thing is the star of the show here. You know, anyone can make a phone and put Android on it right now. This, you know, Chinese manufacturers are doing that every single day, aren't they? You know, he's more beholden to the carriers and things with the phone, with Android. But with the ambient OS, like I say, being open source and access to developers, this is what makes this really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm really intrigued to see where this goes over the next 12, 18 months.
So am I.
So do you think Apple are looking at this right now before Monday?
Of course they are.
And they're like,
of course they're looking at it. And of course this, the Essential Home was unveiled when it was. That was no coincidence.
Yeah, exactly.
So
is this now going to be a race to market?
It doesn't need to be a race to market so much because we're still so early in this game. But excuse me, what they needed was to get mindshare early, and they did. And the objective, I think, was to get people talking about Essential Home and talking about it before Apple announces whatever they're going to announce, assuming they do, and to have people comparing what Apple and Essential are doing. That's totally what I think they were going for. And it's working perfectly. I mean, look at us right now. Yeah. I think we're doing exactly what they were hoping for.
Exactly. Is price point then going to be really, really key here? Because if Apple announce a speaker on Monday with your normal expectations of an Apple price point, if that speaker's in the, I don't know, $249,299 type field, is that going to stop people buying at that point and wait to see what Essential Home's going to come out with?
Apple is going to be priced over $300. I am certain of it. Wow, assuming really? they do, this, because this is a device that's going to have seven speakers built into it. That's what the word on the street is. So if Apple is packing in speakers like that into this device,
but the Echo has seven speakers, doesn't it, Jeff?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't the Echo have seven speakers?
No, it has two.
Oh, is that all it is, right? Okay.
It has a woofer and a tweeter, and that's right. And if you get the Echo Dot, it's just a single speaker.
Yeah.
So seven speakers. Okay, now you're going for a more higher-end audiophile market like the Sonos does. So this is going to be something that's over $300 easy.
Wow. But then, like you say, we're talking about this, and we're excited about this, but we're geeks, and we understand why this is exciting. Apple have stores and a fan base and devices that are linked to their device. Do you think that would eclipse, you know, the marketing of what the Essential Home could actually do and its success?
Maybe.
Which would be sad, really, because it's the same way that, you know, having default Apple Music on your phone could kill Spotify, things like that, you know. It's going to buy your phone, and while you're here, you might want this laptop, this iPad, this speaker. It'd be interesting to see what the go-to-market strategy is on this.
You know, I think that this might be the one place where Essential has kind of missed the mark, because it really looks like what they want to do is to have the Essential Home to Siri speaker comparison happening. Mm-hmm. I think the real competition is going to come from Amazon and from Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what they want to do is there's people out there who've got, you've got your Samsung TV with your Samsung apps running on there. You've got your smart ovens, you've got your Wemo lights, you've got all these different IoT devices in there. I think Essential just want to be able to drop their home hub in the middle of every home, and almost every home will have compatible devices.
Yeah, but it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah,
just show up supporting everyone right out of the gate.
Yeah,
and we need more of that just generally across the tech industry, don't we? These silos that we all live in now is just, it gets so frustrating because you get trapped, don't you? And then it's very hard to move on.
You know, the silo from one perspective, I like, because like with Apple silo for iOS, they're really controlling what's available. So we have less of a likelihood of security and malware issues. Mm-hmm. So here's what I would like. I want a hybrid system, and I think this is what Essential Home can give us. I can have my silo where I feel more secure that the apps that I'm installing on my devices are not going to steal my data and expose me to hackers, but then give me something that lets me control all of these different siloed things. Because, you know, like right now, I have HomeKit stuff, I have Wemo stuff, I have a couple other things too. So I have these different siloed things, and I'm having to cobble together my own system to bridge them into a unified interface. Give me a device that becomes that unified interface to support all the different silos, and then I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the way forward. Well, Camps, that was very well done. I didn't know how. I looked at that story and I thought, I don't know of an eloquent way to put that forward, but you did a pretty good job, mate.
Thank you.
Well done, Jeffrey.
All right, my story is there. You go. Okay, so my story is about a company called One Login, and they handle at more of the corporate level password management and secure data storage. So one of their things that they do is provide services to other companies so that they can have unified logins single sign-on for all different kinds of services. And what happened was hackers got a hold of their AWS keys. And the way one login had all their encryption set up, they had the ability to decrypt everyone's stuff.
Oh no.
So that means that all these passwords, all of this other secure data that they're storing is now all totally open and susceptible to hackers.
Somebody dropped a ball there.
Yeah, and they dropped the ball at the very beginning because they had to design their system this way. They had to make a choice. Do we design a data storage and encryption and password management system where only the clients using it have access to the data, or do we write a system where we have a way to decrypt it as well? And they chose the latter. I mean, that had to be a conscious choice.
Yeah. So, this without wanting to take it down an almighty rabbit hole, this is the you create a backdoor, people will find their way to exploit it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And they totally found a way to do it. And so if you're in the United States and you're a one login client, you're really hosed. And the process that you have to go through to make sure your data is safe involves a lot of steps and a big leap of faith that what one login is doing is actually going to keep your data safe in the future.
Well, if I'm a one login user, if I was one of their customers now, what I would be doing is going straight into my profile, taking a list of everything that I've got stored in there, every single logon, resetting every single one of them, and then shutting my one login account down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No question.
I actually find their obviously this blog post actually very alarming erring on the side of caution here. But going forward is three lines of text. You know, there's no advice to anyone. You know, we're looking at it, but in the meantime, you are at risk.
And they did send out notices to their clients. And the notices were terse, but also very very alarming, because that notice that went out said everything is decryptable by the bad guys, absolutely everything.
Bloody hell!
So are they planning to change their model? As in,
they haven't said anything. What we know right now is that they're cooperating with law enforcement for a criminal investigation, and they have hired an independent third-party security company to help them analyze what's happened and come up with a strategy. And I think the strategy needs to be everything that you've done, the entire infrastructure you've built, throw it out and start over, because this is bad and wrong the way you've set this up.
Absolutely. And I love the fact on their website it says why one login. And it says strengthen security. One login enables IT to execute identity policy across all users, devices, cloud, and on-premises applications. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. And okay, so you read what they do. Now, to extrapolate that out, let's say you are an end user and the company or the service that you rely on, so whatever company's handling that, they are the one login client. And so they're using the service. That means you as the end user, you are kind of screwed.
Yeah,
because there's nothing you can do. It doesn't matter what your password is or if you change it, there's nothing you can do to protect yourself. You are at the mercy of the service you use and that service as a client of one login.
That's just...
This is not nearly as happy a story as Essential Home.
No,
but it does. You know, it's that kind of all your eggs in one basket kind of thing. You know, we rely on these companies to look after our data. You know, I'm sure all of us have stuff in the cloud or whatever, or we rely on other companies to look after our stuff. You know, I myself, and I'm sure you guys do, have. Extra ways that we kind of keep our data secure. I think up until your transporter died, Jeff, you had your own kind of home version of backing things up, and even the stuff that I put in the cloud, I back up to a NAS locally, and because I don't trust them at all. But we're talking about, you know, from what they're saying and what they're advertising as a company is they're selling to big companies. They're working with other IT professionals, and no one saw this coming, or they just put their trust in this, and it was like, you know, I used to have this when I worked in IT. They'd come and do the big presentation. There'd be all the big I am, I can do this, we can do that. And you put your trust in them, and then you get something like this, you've got nowhere to turn.
And that's mainly, Paul, because the sales team and the risk team and the engineering team isn't joined up. The sales team, their job is to go out and sell the product to make the sale.
And the sales team, they probably have no idea how the backend is working.
Absolutely.
Which, by the way, I totally failed when I first started talking about this, because I started tossing around tech jargon, industry jargon, and I said AWS and didn't tell anyone what that means. That's Amazon Web Services. This is the big server infrastructure that Amazon has created that a huge portion of the internet relies on.
Yeah.
It's basically the backbone, isn't it? So even Apple use AWS, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. And when was it? Was it about November time when AWS S3 went down?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. And it took
significant portions. Twitter and so many organizations went down that day.
Didn't they reboot the server or something? They
I think it was some manual.
They were doing a maintenance thing, and the person that was doing part of it entered the wrong command line thing.
Yeah. bit of manual code. Press return. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Nothing like a little typo to test the integrity of the internet.
And the thing that worries me about this, we all use services like one login, one password, keychain, things like that, because we all know now that you don't use the same password for everything. You have a complex password, and you don't write your password down. But absolutely none of us can do that without using a password manager. It's just impossible. And things like this are worrying, and I think if news like this breaks mainstream and stops people putting their trust in password managers, people will go back to pen and paper or simplistic passwords, and that's a bigger problem.
Or an Excel spreadsheet.
Or
even worse, a Google Doc spreadsheet.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, can you imagine? Because you absolutely thing is that is, you know, we're telling people all the time, and we're lucky because we know these things. We know that you don't use the same password everywhere else, and you know, I work in an organization where we're forced to change our password every so often, but everyone knows that you change it five times, you can change it back to the one that you had before. You know, those sort of things, people don't kind of think. It's that thing where people think it's not going to be me. It's never going to be me. But even I don't know any of my passwords. I don't know any of my passwords.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Because they're all randomly generated. And even with that, my Skype got hacked. I know there's a bit of a spate of it in the last month or so. And even that, mine was compromised. And I have like a 32-digit password, as complex as you can get it. And That was still compromised. And it's that thing of just having one password, isn't it? And just using it across everything else. But we tell people not to do it. So they go, well, how do I get around that? Look at password manager. And if people lose their trust in those, then it just blows the whole thing out of the water.
Yeah, I agree. I use single sign-on for a few things. And it's brilliant. It, you know, convenience wise, all you do is you click the button, you're in. But this just blows in a hole in terms of confidence and things like that.
Yeah. Although I just moved to two-factor on Apple. That's a pain in the ass.
It's a total pain in the ass to get set up.
Yeah, the only reason I did it is so I can unlock my Mac with my watch. The only reason I did it, and now every time I'm like, we've sent a code to you, one of your devices. I'm like, which one is it?
Yeah. Oh, funny thing for me, the way that's working is if I'm doing some sort of two-factor authentication login with my iPhone that related to my Apple ID, I'll get the pop-up right on my phone where I've got the authentication code and everything. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
It's no longer two-factor authentication if you're going to show me that code on the device that I'm actually using to log in.
Yeah, I got that. No, yeah, I was logging into iCloud.com and it did that. And I was like, because that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not secure. So, yeah, it's nice to be able to walk up to my Mac and it unlocks, but
Maybe Apple will improve the way their two-factor authentication system functions, and maybe they'll show that off at WWDC.
We can only hope. Another one for the bingo card, boys. So, well, Jeff, look, it was a happy thing because we've warned people about the issue. Maybe people who listen to the show, maybe one login customers and they didn't know yet. So you've maybe saved them a lot of hassle. See?
I certainly hope so.
Happy all around. Right. This show and all the others, as you know, is supported by UK2. We wouldn't be here without them. I wouldn't be here with the lovely Camps and the sexy Jeff. See, I got that one there. It's quite simply, they're awesome. I'm a customer of theirs, not just because of BTN, just because they're awesome. And as a freelance web designer, I recommend them to all of my clients, and they're absolutely brilliant. They've got all the BTN shows going back to the Bagel Tech days, which back when did point out that I got wrong at the start of this show. Might edit that one out. But if you go over to the support us page over at BTN and you will get any of their services, you can get loads off your basket for VPNs, VPS, domains, and just if you really, really like them supporting us, and you enjoy, if you're on the bus on the way to work on a Monday morning, and you listen to this, or you're in your car, or you're doing the ironing, or something like that, just take a moment out and just drop a tweet going at UK2. Thanks for supporting at British Tech. We really love them. They support us, and like I say, we could never do this without them, and they are top class. Now. Cool things, boys.
Yeah.
Start me off with the Camps.
Okay, okay. Just paste this in. There we go. So, my sister, husband, their parents, they're over in Orlando at the moment. And just before they went, I got asked the question: can I recommend a currency conversion app for whilst they're over there? So I had a little look, and I came across Elk. Which looks to be a fairly new app. It's not something I'd ever heard of before. But the reason I chose Elk for them is my sister's got an Apple Watch. It's a very simplistic. It's a very nice, clean user interface. You put your source currency, your destination currency, for want of a better way of putting it, in there. And the conversion is very, very quick and easy. It's a nice little, very simplistic interface in terms of the phone. But it's got a watch app. And when we've talked before around, so how many apps do we really find worthwhile in terms of the watch? How many do we really use? This is a nice clean one. You set it on your phone. So she's somewhere over there in the US. Taps the app, brings it up on a watch. Two, three little dials to put in your in the amount that you're paying for, and it does your instant currency conversion. Like I said, very simplistic. It's a free app. And from the few tests that I did last week on it, seems to work really well.
Oh, fantastic. I think that's a really handy thing, especially with the way our currency is going up and down at the moment.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And in all honesty, not to blow up my sister too much, she would have zero idea without using a currency calculator. She would not be able to compute that in her head, how much she's paying for that meal or whatever it is that she's buying while she's over there. So she absolutely needs something to refer to. This is just nice and simple.
Fantastic. This is just the thing. This is the thing about the watch as well, isn't it? The accessibility of just you know, the reason I didn't upgrade my phone is because I use everything through the watch. And like you say, there's not many apps that come from the phone to the watch that are very useful. So just find that little one that's just lift your wrist up, tap, do the thing you want and get about your business. They're great, aren't they?
Yeah. And this one, like I say, very simplistic. I thought, you know, she's got the watch, so let's make some use of it rather than her having to root around in a bag, find the phone, load the app, type it in, all probably while she stood at a till point somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, you're standing in the queues and stuff. That's the winner. Yeah, especially as somebody who uses Apple Pay, you know, I see people like sticking their card in the machine and typing their numbers in, or rooting for change. It's like, just want to tap and leave. Just sort it out.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's a certain. Do you know what? I'm going to give that a go, especially when the wife's talking about booking more holidays. So do that. Jeffrey, do you have anything for me?
I do, and I'm so glad that Camps went first, because I was about to have a pick that actually can't talk about yet. So I have a different one.
Oh, good.
That would have been bad. Anyhow, so my pick goes back to the siloed stuff, and this is the Wemo Mini Wi-Fi smart plug. And the reason this makes a great backup pick for me, and I can talk about the other one soon, but not today, it's because Wemo got smart and they took that giant smart plug thing they had that was just way too big and totally covered your entire outlet and turned it into something that's, you know, like this. So you can actually stack two onto a single outlet if you want. And it's pretty inexpensive. It's like $34 US dollars. Excuse me. But here's the kicker. This model, when Belkin releases their HomeKit compatible hub later this year, this one will work with it. So when that happens, that means that devices like this one will work through the Wemo app. They'll be Alexa compatible and HomeKit compatible.
Absolutely brilliant. The Wemo switches are brilliant. I've only got a few in the house. Mainly for lights and stuff, because it's that thing where you go to bed at night and you've got to turn all the lights off, and it's just nice to be able to just do that from, you know, you do that thing where you turn the lights off and then you walk through a darkened house and trip over things and bang your shins and all that sort of stuff. So it's just nice to get in bed and just go, turn the lights off, please. But yeah, the Wemo stuff is absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I love the look of that. $34. If only I had a currency converter app to work out, well, that would be in England.
If only. Yeah. So the way I'm using mine, I have three of the Wemo smart plugs in my place. I'm controlling two window air conditioners and a window fan. So it's essentially my HVAC system is handled by Wemo. And then I'm using If This Then That to trigger when each device turns on or off based on the temperature that my Echo Bee is reading and the Echo Bee remote sensors that are set around my place. So each air conditioner turns on and off independently of the other based on how warm or cool it is in that part of my apartment.
Oh, and fantastic.
It's pretty freaking awesome.
Okay. Can we get that over here? Yeah,
I believe you can.
Okay, I'm going to follow up my wife later. More things to buy.
You're welcome.
Thank you. My cool thing is something, and you may be able to shed some light on this. It was reviewed by Mac Jim, who's in our Slack room, and it's the Spark Mail app. It's a new mail app for iOS.
Oh, SparkMail.
Now, with all, it looked pretty awesome. I read the review. I thought that looks really great. And we posted his review. And then in Slack room, I think it was Patrick who asked, he said, well, how are they making their money? And I was like, oh. And after that, you know, Unroll Me kind of thing and all that, you're like, oh, that's a good point. It's a very good app. How are they making their money? And we had a look, and what it is they're making their money out of teams and organizations, which is good. They're not selling your data or anything like that.
Same as Slack.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So, you know, obviously for your personal use and those sort of things, it's really good. So I thought, okay, yeah, I'm happy with that. So I've installed it on my phone, my iPad, and my Mac. And what it reminds, do you remember Mailbox?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's basically Mailbox. And it's brilliant. So it's got all of those features. It's got a lot of focus inbox. It's got stuff you can pin. But it's also got that lovely feature, which is like if you've got a mailbox like me, and I'm sure the two of you the same, where you get so much stuff in your inbox, and it's very hard to concentrate on what the things you need to concentrate on. So it has that feature where you can like snooze emails. You can say, come back tomorrow, come back in an hour, all of those sort of things. And it's really, really nice. It takes a little bit of muscle memory. I've replaced it as replaced Outlook at work as my mail client. It takes a little bit of, you know, getting used to, but just that thing where I go, these emails aren't relevant today. I'll deal with them tomorrow. And then I've got a smaller inbox that I can just deal with. It's really nice. And like I say, if you're just using it here and there, it's totally free. And, yeah, check out the reviews blog, BritishTechNetwork.com, and you can see Mac Tim's review. Really great. So, and I have, because I can't.
It's Readle as well, isn't it? So,
yeah.
You know, this isn't a lone sort of developer out there. These are a well established set of developers.
Yeah, I thought I'd give it a go. You know, stuck my Gmail account in there, and which isn't that important to me. And then I thought, hey, you know, this works really well. And the only problem I ever had with the mailbox app is it only worked with Gmail, but this works with my Office 365, and just, yeah, I'm really enjoying it at the moment. It's got a few problems at the moment. It doesn't connect to the global address list for Exchange and those sort of things, but, you know, I'm running it in parallel with Outlook, so if I really need, if really get into difficulty, I can just load up my works email. But yeah, for free, well worth a go. So,
and the guys at Readle,
mm-hmm.
they're awesome.
Well, if you know them, you can tell them from me. They're awesome too.
Okay, I think they're going to be at WWDC. So, you want me to give them a hug for you?
Give them a hug for me,
please.
I can do that.
Give me a hug and a tickle from me.
I can do that.
tell them to give us a shout, Jeff. Maybe we can be friends.
Okay. I can do that.
Special friends.
Yeah, do that.
Well, thank you, boys. We have taken a very intimate show, and I think we've done a bloody good job.
Tried.
Yeah, I think Ewan is going to be very proud of you.
Oh, bless. Yeah, I'll get a little pat on the head for that. So the last thing I need to do is, I know, but the people out there might not know, where can we get a hold of you, Camps?
Get me at Camping UK on Twitter every week here on the Big Show. Read some of my reviews on the BritishTechNetwork.com/reviews.
Fantastic. Jeffrey?
I am hanging out over at MacObserver.com along with a lot of other really awesome writers. I am on I have to do a podcast plug. Since I'm going to be at WWDC next week, listen to Daily Observations, because I'll be talking about everything that's going on every day of the week. So
Jeff, I'll be able to give people
daily updates.
Will you be doing any periscopes or anything like that we need to look out for?
It depends on how much bandwidth is available. With that many developers in one place, I may not be able to do periscopes. We'll see. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and my wife says hello, Jeff.
Oh, tell your wife hello for me. Will you give her a hug that goes on just slightly too long?
Of course, of course.
And Paul, put her in touch. Maybe we could be special friends.
Special friends.
Yeah.
My name's Wright. You can find me at Paul is on Twitter. You know, not that there that very often. Here on the Big Show, on the Pocket Show, was going to do one this week, but things happened and it didn't happen. But there'll be one soon in the Slack room. doing the reviews, and on a Sunday over at simplysyndicated.com with Rich, the Switch. So thank you so much for coming out. Thank you, guys. It's great to hang out with my mates on a Friday night. And we'll see you all soon. Ta-ta!